This is Fresh Air. Jimmy Santiago Baca was formed by the years he spent in prison. He recently returned to prison, but it wasn't to do time, it was to make a movie. Baca wrote the screenplay for the new film Bound by Honor about Chicano life in East L.A. Baca also has a part in the film as a prisoner. Baca is part Chicano, part Native American. He grew up in an orphanage and on the streets. He spent several years in prison on drug charges. It was in prison that he learned to read and write. He had a couple of poems published in Mother Jones magazine while he was behind bars. Since getting out, he's had books of poems and essays published and has won the Before Columbus National Book Award, the Wallace Stevens Fellowship from Yale University, and the Pushcart Prize. Baca lives in Albuquerque with his family. He went to San Quentin to shoot the new film, and he was surprised at how he reacted to being back in a prison.
What surprised me was my response to the hyper-reality of it all. You think that after, during the filming of the film in San Quentin, I sort of went crazy with going back in. And one day as Taylor Hackford was shooting a scene, I had had enough, and I walked right in front of the camera and stopped the shooting. And I said that I was leaving. And he said, well, why? We need you. You can't. You're part of the, you're one of the actors. And I said, well, I can't deal with it anymore. So he let me, he allowed me to, he was kind enough to get me a place where I could just take a few days off and start writing this book to deal with the emotions that I was feeling. And as I began to write this book called Working in the Dark, I began to write, try to figure out what my response was, what I was feeling in prison. And it was a shock to me that I had lost, I'd been out of prison 12 years, but I had lost all sense of being out and being a free man and having a farm and doing all the wonderful things that I do in life. I had forgot all of that and had just plunged back into the abyss of being a convict. And I felt a lot of hatred coming back and a lot of nightmarish grief and a lot of anguish.
You've had a pretty rough life. Let me just like run through with you some of the things that have happened to you in your life. You were born both Chicano and Apache descent. Your parents divorced and abandoned you when you were 2 years old. Why did they abandon you?
Well, the reasons for that are many. I mean, mostly historical reasons that have to do with colonialism and the 50s after World War II, you know, when they had this huge en masse of homesteaders that had settled and had taken all the land from us, and the courts were reaffirming the robbery and they were legitimizing it. And you had all these people that were starving during the great droughts, you know, in Oklahoma and New Mexico and Texas, and people were moving. The reasons are many, but I suppose my father was trying to become, I mean, prove he was American, was forced to come to the urban centers to work. And my mother, on the other hand, went the other route and was trying to marry an Anglo so that she could be accepted or feel like she was acceptable.
But why did they abandon you?
Well, for the reasons I just explained. For all those reasons, the economic reasons, there may have been no money, the reasons of the drought in the pueblos, for the reason of them coming to the cities and wanting to assimilate into America, you know. I mean, those reasons, they left me with my grandma, and they took. I guess the reason they abandoned me was they didn't know how to take care of themselves. They were being assaulted and assailed from all sides. Well, you know, I mean, and when that happens, how can you cope with taking care of kids when you can't even take care of yourself?
How did you end up in an orphanage?
I was taken there because the authorities thought it was bad influence for me to be around the the people in my pueblo. They thought that I should learn how to speak English and be a Catholic.
Did you identify more as Native American or Chicano or both, or did it matter?
Well, you find out that despite all the catastrophic the cyclones and all of the whirlwinds occurring around me as a child, I found that the safe place to be was on the playground with the kids. And it's funny because the little white boys that were there from the mountains and the black kids and the Chicano kids and the Indian kids all sort of became, their ethnicity became neutral, because when you're poor and abandoned and you're swinging on a swing with a kid or sliding down the slider in the pool or on the merry-go-round or the teeter-totter, you don't think so much what the kid is from or where he's at, because it seems that the similarity in experiences dissolve differences in ethnicity. And so we were all just a bunch of kids who were there, you know, suffering from the same situations and enjoying the same benefits.
So you left the orphanage when you were 12. Did you run away, or did they release you? What was the story?
Well, I ran away a lot of times. I had this, Baba Neruda says in one of his poems, I had little tiny flames shooting out from my heels, as most children do. But I ran away many times, and I ran away on the last, they were going to send me to Boys Town, and I ran away.
When you were 12?
Yeah. So ultimately, I just never came back.
So where did you live? How did you live?
Well, you know, I lived, I hustled. I mean, I didn't really hustle that much. I really depended on the kindness and the generosity of my people. And I lived with many friends' families. And they gave me, like, they would give me a meal. And they would give me food. And then the hardest part about living on the streets as a kid is when the rest of the kids are in school and the grown-up adults have gone to work and you're left with the very ancient or the handicapped or the invalids. You sort of people the world with them. And you begin to think there must be something wrong with you too, that you're one of the damaged ones.
My guest is Jimmy Santiago Baca. He wrote the screenplay for the new film Bound by Honor. His latest book is Writing in the Dark: Reflections of a Poet in the Barrio. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer Jimmy Santiago Baca. How did you end up in prison?
They have a law in 1972 and 71 that said, it was a ridiculous law, and it was primarily responsible for breaking the boundaries of prison room, and for rooming and selling three, four people to a cell, which is really crazy. But I was in the vicinity where the commission of a crime took place, and since it was re-election, it was a Mormon county, it was a Mormon judge, a Mormon lawyers, and all that, and it was re-election time, and everybody in that town hates Mexicans and that whole thing. They really did take a tour de force on this and took everybody in that was there when everybody knew it was one person's fault. But they gave a friend of mine 50 years, 50 to 90 years. They gave my girlfriend 3 solid years in a maximum security prison. And she was from the school, from the Juilliard School in New York. She was practicing music and never, she had nothing to do with anything. Neither did I, for that matter. But anyway, you know how that goes. They rounded up a bunch of people, and then the spectacular news of the day was this and that. And so it was a real lifeline for the judicial system in Yuma, Arizona, to make for their heyday. You know.
So what were the charges?
Drugs, possession with the intent to sell, to distribute.
And were you dealing at the time?
Of course not. The judges knew that, and the lawyers knew that. They all knew it. It was just. They said to me, look, this is how America works. You know, you waste our time, you're going to get worse. Plead guilty and we go on to the next case and we'll be easy on you.
How old were you the first time you were sent to prison?
I was 18.
And you couldn't read?
Well, you know, functionally illiterate. Anybody can read it or you or a, and, but. But it's quite another thing to, it's not so much the fact that you can read or not read. I couldn't read. But it's what happens to an individual who's not able to read. What condition does that person fall into?
Well, did it ever bother you before then that you couldn't read?
Quite a bit.
Were you embarrassed by it?
Never embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. So tell me more about how being in prison led you to start reading.
Well, you know, I wanted to take my GED, and they refused to let me take my GED. They want me to work, so I told them I'm not working until I get privileges to go to school. And that was it. We stayed at that impasse for the entire time I was in prison.
Were you punished for your position?
Of course, yeah. I was punished very severely, many times. And I never did work, though, I'm proud to say.
Did you get to study for your GED?
Never.
So how did you start to read?
Well, there was a guy named Harry, who was a good Samaritan in Phoenix, who wrote me a letter saying, what do I need? For Christmas, you know, he picked my name out of a hat and said, you know, well, this Christmas time, you don't have anybody to visit or anybody, so what would you like? And I told him, well, could you send me a book, English and a Spanish book, so I could learn what verbs are and nouns and stuff. And he did. And I took off. I got a bunch of books from the other convicts, and I started reading and writing. And I started writing letters and poems and everything for the convicts, and they gave me coffee, cigarettes, pencils, tablets, and I started a very thriving bartering system.
Do you remember anything you wrote? Any of the letters or poems that you wrote for other people inside?
I remember the first stanza I ever wrote in my life that I think had carried some fire to it. I was in the shower, taking a shower, and it struck me, and I ran out naked, ran down the tier, ran into my cell, and jotted it down with wet, soapy hands.
What was it?
It was just a four-line, two couplets. It was, did you tell them hell is not a dream and that you've been there, did you tell them? And it came because of, we had a visit from a group of citizens to prison. And they sort of went around, you know. They sort of walked around without taking stock of very much. Mostly just the impotent routine of people just coming to take a look and walking out. And did you tell them that hell, that you've been there and that hell's not a dream, did you tell them? Seemed to me to resonate with something that was volcanically brewing beneath me somewhere.
Were you able to read that to someone after you wrote it?
No, except the birds. Birds and the trees and the air and the dust and the sun outside my window.
How much did you want somebody else to hear it when you wrote that?
Well, not very much. I mean, I didn't think I was going to be a poet or a writer. My goal in life was to be an English teacher. So what I was writing, I wasn't particularly gung-ho about having people hear it or even read it because I didn't think I was a poet. I didn't think I was a writer. I was simply trying to grasp the language. And in doing so, I kept a journal. I kept many journals. And it wasn't until Mother Jones, I sent three poems to them, and I didn't know how to put the stamp or the address on the letter or anything, but I did send them three poems, and they published the poems internationally and sent me $300, and I was like, wow.
So were you? Was the $300 held for you till you were released?
No. They put it in my store, and I bought ice cream for the whole cell block.
You treated everybody?
Yeah. Since everybody had been supporting me for a few years, I decided it was my turn to give them something.
Can I ask you to read a poem from your collection, Immigrants in Our Own Land, and yeah. Selected early poems? The poem is called Cloudy Day.
Cloudy Day.
First, tell us when you wrote this.
Well, I remember I was standing outside, and I guess it was about 77, 78, something like that.
You were in prison?
Yeah. Cloudy day. It is windy today. A wall of wind crashes against. Windows clunk against. Iron frames as wind swings past broken glass and seethes. Like a frightened cat in empty spaces of the cell block. In the exercise yard, we sat huddled in our prison jackets on our haunches against the fence, and the wind carried our words over the fence, while the vigilant guard on the tower held his cap at the sudden gust. I could see the main tower from where I sat, and the wind in my face gave me the feeling I could grasp the tower like a cornstalk and snap it from its roots of rock. The wind plays it like a flute, this hollow shoot of rock. The brim girded with barbed wire, with a guard sitting there also, listening intently to the sounds as clouds cover the sun. I thought of the day I was coming to prison in the back seat of a police car. Hands and ankles chained, the policeman pointed. You see that big water tank, bear boy? The big silver one out there sticking up. That there's prison. And here I am. I cannot believe it. Sometimes it is such a dream, where I stand up in the face of the wind like now it blows at my jacket and my eyelids flick a little bit while I stare disbelieving. The third day of spring, and 4 years later, I can tell you how a man can endure, how a man can become so cruel, how he can die or become so cold. I can tell you this. I've seen it every day, and still I'm strong enough to love you, love myself, and feel good Even as the earth shakes and trembles and I have not a thing to my name, I feel as if I have everything, everything.
Was that written for a person?
It's written for me.
You've been out of prison for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us something about what your life is like now. You live on a farm.
Oh, it's exciting. I go to Mexico City in 2 days. I'm going to meet Octavio and Gabriel Garcia Marquez in Cartagena, and I'm writing feverishly, and I've got wonderful books that I'm working on, and I read a lot, and I've got incredible children, and I've got... You know what I was doing this morning?
What?
I was planting flowers. I was starting a garden. Me and my children were planting flowers. And there was a peacock. I don't know where it came from, but it flew into my yard, and my horse was gone. I don't know where my horse went. You know, I'm up to my neck. I got invited to the New Orleans Jazz Festival, and I got all these programs for kids who are barefoot and hungry and illiterate, and I'm working with them, and I can't really ask for much more right now. I'm busted broke, but what are you going to do about that, right? I mean, I've got everything else but money, so I'm not complaining.
Jimmy, thank you a lot for talking with us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Jimmy Santiago Baca wrote the screenplay for the new film, Bound by Honor. This is Fresh Air.